This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. So many villains, too little time. We go to Iran and what appears to be Iran's space program, launching what was said to be satellites, not quite. Malcolm, what is the significance of Iran toying around with a space program? What does it gain them?
Well, it gains them a lot, especially coming, John, as during the Vienna talks, because it's a direct affront to many of the members, especially the French, who now the Iranians say are leading the opposition in the E3, especially with the absence of the U.S., that France condemned Iran's satellite rocket launch and said it was all more regrettable given the talks. And the launch, which is part of their effort to build their ballistic missile capacity, which is a violation of the JCPOA and of all the agreements that they have signed. So they launched something which had three research devices meant to go into space. It's a violation of the UN rules. It's a violation of the agreements they signed. And it's really not just to get the satellite up, but it's more important to improve their capacity. If they tested the ballistic missile alone, then that would they think that it would be seen as more of a violation. And this is sort of a charade. The problem is that the thing never made it into orbit, didn't have the power to get there. They did send one into orbit in 2011, and they said they did a third in 2012, but the first, of course, in 2019, the OMID, which was widely reported. And they're supposed to hold back for 8 years from work on a ballistic missile, and they're not. This is also related to what we're seeing is the sharp increase in the use of missiles in the wars that Iran is preparing for. The Iranian Guard, in an exercise I mentioned, I think, last week, fired cruise missiles during this major military exercise. It's one demonstrative. They fired five at an unspecified number of attack drones, and they claim they all successfully hit their targets. So they are expanding their drone capacity. They're exporting that capacity as well to the Houthis, to Syria. We saw the attacks in the last days against U.S. troops, repeated attacks marking the second anniversary of Soleimani's elimination. And they claim that their cruise missiles has a 1,000-kilometer range up to 2,000, which is about 1,250 miles. We know what that incorporates and includes. So In 3 days, we saw a series of three attacks by armed drones, Iranian-supplied, shot down in attacks on U.S. troops in Iraq. So it's becoming more and more bold. They, of course, are tying it to the killing of Soleimani. But obviously, this is something that they prepared for more, and it's more an effort to try and drive out the U.S. remaining troops who are there, not in a combat role, but in a supervisory role, an assistance role. And the U.S. formally ended its combat mission there. They were shot down by the CRAM defense system that protects American installations in Iraq.
The National Security Advisor of the United States, Mr. Sullivan, has made remarks about snapback. Remind everyone what that is, Malcolm.
Well, snapback means that they can put back the sanctions that are suspended under the JCPOA's stipulations. Now, America, frankly, can't because it's not part of the JCPOA right now. But the Europeans could, and some of the Europeans are now talking about the snapback provision. He is saying that if there's no agreement in Vienna with the Iranians, and has been very negative in his assessment of it, and he said if they don't negotiate in good faith, as has been believed till now, then the snapback sanctions, which were built into the JCPOA, would be reactivated, and Europeans and everybody else who signed it would be obligated under it. And when we see how the Iranian militias are attacking and the Iranian-backed militias are using the rockets, we said, in the various countries, and violations, especially in the oil field, in the oil sector, which we mentioned, and people ask, how is it possible for them smuggling it out? The answer is they do it at night. They do it in installations. They have ships waiting offshore under various fake names and registrations. And they often Dubai-based companies and companies from other countries in the region. One guy just testified this week how they were shipping Iranian fuel to Somalia. And it amounts to, over the course of a year, to a very significant amount of money, both for the private shipping and for the IRGC, which makes money on everything. We're talking about millions of barrels in the course of a year. So Iran is using that money to help support the export of these drones and using them. And it seems that they're not concerned about escalating the violence and the response by the U.S. to the increased use of these of the drones against our troops and against our allies.
Yemen, Malcolm. The Houthis in Yemen are the aggressors. They are a subset of the Iranian regime. They seized a UAE ship recently in the Red Sea. To what end, Malcolm? Why are they provoking a further conflict with the Gulf?
Well, as you know, the Houthis get their weapons and support from Iran, and they have been escalating their attacks in naval war generally between Iran and others. But now they revealed that they seized an Emirati ship, a UAE ship, in part as the warning to Israel, they said, but it seems to be much more so. They recorded it, they made it very manifest, and they said it was carrying a military equipment in Yemeni waters by the Ansar al-Allah, meaning the Houthi movement took it. And they're saying that this shifts the balance of power in favor of the Yemenis. Iran calls the Houthis the Yemenis, and the government, and refers to them as the government of Iran. But obviously, you know, this has very broad implications. Bab al-Mandab, very critical choke points in the Red Sea, and the direct threats that this represents, because we know they have drones there now from Iran and Yemen that could reach Israel. And of course, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and others have been put on the defensive and have been responding to the violence inside the Yemen, even though the UAE has said that it's pulled out of the battle. In fact, the evidence is that they are still trying to be supportive. The Houthis went so far as to produce audio and video of the raid and claim that this is having a negative impact, demoralizing the opposition, and calling it unprecedented, and saying they use methodologies that no one has ever seen before. And of course, tying Israel to some of the UAE and other installations. So they're saying that any hostile activity will be met with force. And we know that they even use their drones to harass U.S. ships from the Fifth Fleet for the last few years. We've reported on it periodically. This is a further escalation. And they even claimed that they destroyed, the Yemeni neighbor destroyed several ships and frigates operated by the U.S.-Saudi aggression, as they call it. We don't know that that's true, but it's certainly becoming a much more bolder manifestation on their part.
We go to some good news, what appears to be good news, and relative to everything else, the defense secretary of the State of Israel meeting with the king in Jordan. Malcolm, the last time we checked in on the king, he was gravely troubled by the Muslim brother element in his society. Has that been solved?
It's not been solved, and you know, two-thirds of his population is Palestinian, but there does appear to be a clear effort on his part to build stronger ties with Israel. I think it is a sign of confidence on his part, and they are obviously critical for the stability in the region, but more importantly, it's critical to Jordan for its internal stability, knowing that it has support. I think in part it has a lot to do with the fact that they don't feel they can rely on the U.S., and we see this manifest in many of the countries, that the West generally is seen as disengaged, and therefore the relationship and the visit of the defense minister talking about the strong and enduring relationship, which helps the security of both and certainly regional stability. This is now follows other visits that have taken place and the closer relationships that seem to have been projected by the new government of Israel when it took office. I think that it comes after Mahmoud Abbas met with Gantz just a week before in his residence. And that was the first time, I think, since 2010 that such a meeting took place. So hopefully it signals something more than just pro forma visits. I think in the case of Jordan, it certainly does.
Kazakhstan, Malcolm, the situation is fog of war. Almaty. You guided me to Almaty in 2003 during the Iraq crisis. I broadcast from there. We all did. And it was there that I met the small Jewish community. I believe your delegation brought them a Torah. Do we know about their fate in this crisis, Malcolm?
Yeah, so far we have not received any SOS calls from there, but the general situation is deteriorating pretty rapidly. Almaty is the largest city. It was the capital when we were there. They moved it to a new capital. Right. It's a challenge to President Tokayev, who succeeded Nazarbayev, who was president when we were there and was the long-term president. And a lot of demonstrations seem to be targeting him, and they are severing ties. He remains a very influential figure in the whole situation in Kazakhstan, which has had a Jewish community for 2,600 years.
And do we have any confirmation that they're okay? We just don't know at this point. We have to stop. I just wanted to check in on them.
Yes, we have word that so far we have not received any calls that they're not being targeted.
Okay.
The demonstrations are still against the major government buildings.
Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.